Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Neil Coulong in a few moments. But first, our play-by-play call of the day.
Third and 20 at the Miami 45 with 26 seconds left of the second quarter.
Nine guys near the line of scrimmage. Eight guys.
He gets, and boy, they bring a bunch. Over the middle, running free. Deontay Johnson, 30, 25, 20. He's at the 15. He's at the 10. Steps out of a tackle and gets into the end zone.
Wow.
A 45-yard touchdown pass. And when Miami brought the kitchen sink, the whole middle of the field looked like the Red Sea.
Bill Hillgrove and Tunj Ilkin with the call, as heard on 100.9 The Valley and the Steelers Radio Network. Steelers won last night after falling behind and spotting Miami a 14-0 lead. There was no panic on the part of my broadcast partner. The interim director of finance was very panicked.
Yes. What's that famous line from Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine? What, me worry? No.
I already told you it was going to be easy. It was easy.
I wouldn't call it easy.
It was easy. Come on, that team's bad. They're awful.
So it made it frustrating when they were down 14. It's like, ugh. They just knew that was going to happen sooner or later when they play down to terrible teams. It's the same pattern. It's like, okay, then they finally...
This is not... You are not playing down to terrible teams. You aren't good. Okay? Stop pretending you're good. You're not.
We're getting better. 3-4. I will admit, I kept biting my lower lip every time I'd see that, you know, score grid in the bottom of the screen last night. It just kept 2-4. 2-4. Yes, I know my team is 2-4. You can take it off the screen now. We know.
I'm just telling you.
I know.
We're playing down to bad teams. No, you aren't good. Okay? That's a difference. You're not very good. Okay? You can't help it. Guys are hurt, the whole deal. But the Steelers are not good. They're not playing down to anybody. You're just playing who you are. I'm sorry. Of all the years, you got to face facts. Other years, how many other years have I said the Steelers are really good? The Steelers are really good.
Several years.
Over and over and over again.
Sure.
So I'm telling you right now, they're not very good. There's some guys on that team are really good, and there's some guys on that team aren't ready to play.
It just doesn't happen a lot. I think that means for a lot of Steeler fans, you're spoiled. You're looking for just high, top shelf, five star. Teams year in and year out, and sooner or later you're going to take your bumps and take your lumps, and there's lots of teams that have struggled for several years that deal
exactly.
with this day in and day out.
Well, Neil Coulong deals with this day in and day out. Joins us. Neil, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm not sure I would have called those three a four, but the way that they've done them, you have to be impressed. Keep in mind, you're a garbage roughing the passer call away from winning all of it, and they still got the ball in overtime with a chance to win too against Baltimore in their one loss. So you're seeing things come together a little bit in Pittsburgh, and it's right on cue for what I thought they would be this season. A rough start. It was going to take them a bit to kind of figure things out offensively. I think that gap got made even wider by the absence of Ben Roethlisberger, and you're still seeing a lot of young, inexperienced problems on the offensive side of the ball. But they're doing some decent things here and there. I think they've got a competitive shot, a puncher's chance here as they'll enter in the second half of the season. But it remains to be seen how much they can coach him up to get them probably, what would they need, at least probably another six wins at least to be in contention for the division. I wouldn't say that's out of the question for them, but they've still got a lot of work that they need to do. But you got to be happy with the progress they've made, certainly since what we saw in week one.
What's the status of James Conner?
Everything we're hearing is a shoulder separation. They're going to limit him early in practice. This week, that's code for Tomlin saying we're not going to reveal anything really until later in the week. But I don't know. Considering the running back situation right now, he also said that Jalen Samuels will be available. It sounds like they're still going to have to sign a running back, whether that's a practice squad guy. I forget even who's on the practice squad nowadays. But Connor's not going to be 100% either way for Sunday. So how much time he'll get if he does play, I think, is beside the point. You better prepare for the yeoman's work going to Samuels this week, whether that's through carries or through the air.
Okay, let's get to Mason Rudolph. What progress have you seen? I know, obviously, he had to miss a game. But is he a different guy now compared to the one that had to start a few weeks ago?
Yesterday, I hate doing this. I don't want to be the amateur internet doctor. A variety of reasons why that's not a good thing. But he didn't look right to me at all. I mean, he was it was as if there were guys charging straight at him in the pocket, and he didn't even flinch. Usually you think that's like a brave, courageous thing, but no, it didn't make any sense. I mean, it almost looked unnatural, his lack of movement in the pocket. I'm not sure how quickly he was processing a lot of what he was seeing down the field. And to me, it was his worst performance in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He made some plays. He got the ball deep, and it certainly helps when you have a zero blitz in man coverage, and they decided to, three defensive backs double team a receiver against three receivers, leaving that wide open. He picked up a huge chunk of the yards that he had, one of the touchdowns that he had, from a bogus defensive assignment. I'm not sure what was going on there for the Dolphins, but he didn't look good at all. Early, he looked terrible.
See, I agree with you. I thought last night he seemed like he didn't quite know what he was seeing out there. There was a play over the middle where I'm not going to get the commentary. Oh, what a defensive play by whatever. The guy was wide open, and then he had stop and wait, and like, hey, I'm here, and then Mason threw it to him, and then it got broken up. The only reason it got broken up is because the pass was so late.
We might even be talking about different plays, but you just described the interception that he threw perfectly.
The interception. This ball was just knocked down, and of course, then the I didn't really look at the play on the monitor. I'm just guessing it was a great play. All right,
so must have been. He made a lot of really bad decisions. He threw a lot of poor passes. I thought he had a bad game. Plain and simple, he played really poorly, and it contributed largely to putting him behind the sticks by quite a bit early. So you've got to worry about that. I mean, he corrected things. It looked a little bit better in the second half, but I think, hands down right now, if the team MVP does not go to a defensive player, it's James Conner or it's nobody. You don't give out an award if it's not. James Conner ran his butt off last night, and he looked great in two straight games now. For him to go down, it's just a kick in the gut for a team that you're having a real tough time buying a break to help get out of the hole that they're already in. Rudolph hasn't done the offense a whole lot of favors to this point. I'm not saying that Hodges is a legitimate offense option, and Mike Tomlin has made it clear that he's not, even to the point where somebody asked him about it. He just skipped the question completely. They're not looking to make a change at all at their starting quarterback. It's Rudolph or nothing. He's going to have to get a lot better. And again, I mean, the decisions that he made were so odd to me that I have to honestly wonder if he was ready, and I don't think that he was. I hope that he's okay just physically. I mean, I thought it was a little odd that he was practicing like a day after the hit that Earl Thomas put on him, but he wants to get out there, he wants to show his worth. I get that, but he didn't look right to me, and that's just my opinion. I'm not going off anything scientific at all. He didn't look like an NFL quarterback should look, especially early on in the game.
All right, so let's get to the defensive side of it. Obviously, what Fitzpatrick doing is tremendous. Mink has been playing really well. What have you seen from other players around him? Because obviously, it's not like they haven't been hit with some injuries or other issues, Anthony Ciccolo, on the side with that defense.
let's go to the night and the day difference here. If you look at the play of Steven Nelson to this point, and you look back on Steelers cornerbacks play over the last 6-7 years, it's unbelievable what he's doing. And a lot of it just seems he is doing the little things correctly. He just doesn't make mistakes often. A great hustle play in causing that fumble in the second half last night. He's great in coverage. He tackles guys. He's not making mistakes. And you see how much that elevates everybody else around him. On the flip side of that, we still continue to see that Mark Barron, every time he's on the field, he's gained at least one of the big gainers that an opponent has. I hate to say this kind of thing, too, but it looks to me like Barron plays the game at practice speed. He doesn't get on the ground and tackles. He's trying to kind of grab guys by the hips and drag them to the ground. I don't know how much they really need him on the field. I don't really understand what they're asking him to do or why they appear to be satisfied with it, but he's an anchor for a defense that's otherwise playing pretty well. And I don't understand the insistence on having him on the field when he's allowing 2-3 big plays a game. So defensively, I think the high and the low to me really is you look at great play from Nelson. T.J. Watt is still playing at a very high level.
Yeah.
And much of that is often offset by somebody like Barron. I'm not pinning it all on him, but they're still not consistently doing the right things all the time. They're far from playing a flawless game defensively, but they are making splash plays. And really, it's the difference between the last couple of years defensively with the sacks and the pressure that they've been able to generate, but now they're adding takeaways to it. And as far as Fitzpatrick goes, he's not making all-world plays 20 yards down the field a la, Troy Polamalu or anything like that, but the big thing I would say is you may not be impressed with the interceptions that he's making, but ask yourself this: why is it that no other Steelers safety ever makes those?
Right.
He's come in and had more takeaways than like the entire team did last year. And yeah, they're on deflections, but they never had any of those. Why is that? We probably don't remember balls that fell to the ground because Sean Davis might not have been in the right place. Mike Mitchell may have been off doing something else. Fitzpatrick is where the ball is all the time. It's the easiest way to put it. And you have to love his energy. You have to love his athleticism. He has a great instinct for the game, a great instinct for the ball. And we're seeing that repeatedly over and over. And this is a second-year player, and he's barely played with the Steelers. It just goes to show, and for me, and I've gotten in arguments with a lot of people about this, I think it was just a great trade for the team for what they needed to do, and they're seeing immediate dividends on it. I don't care where they're going to end up drafting. Whoever it is not capable of helping the team right now. And odds are really good he's not going to be able to do it next year the way Fitzpatrick is going to be able to do it too. He's the type of player you want on your team for 13 years, and the earlier he can start that, the better, and that's what they have.
Yeah. They've got the Colts coming up. This is a different Colts team than anybody would have imagined at the beginning of the year because there's no Andrew Luck. All right, it's Jacoby Brisker out there. So what do you think of the Colts? They're 5-2. What do you think of them?
Colts, I mean, I think if anything, it goes to show the value of an outstanding leader and an outstanding coach. For what Frank Reich has been asked to do this year, no doubt he knew that Andrew Luck was at least contemplating retiring, or at the very least, wasn't going to be ready to play in week one. Mm-hmm. To have to turn to your backup as your unquestioned starter before the season even starts. And keep in mind, with all due respect to Jacoby Brissett, he played a pretty good game against the Steelers the last time they saw him. He's not somebody that you're going to expect to get a $200 million contract when his time is up.
But Brissett's style is slightly different than Luck, and Frank Reich was ready for it.
Yeah, he's very different than Luck, and I think what they do offensively now is anti-Luck. Just in the sense that you don't have that kind of arm talent. You're not going to really find that anywhere else, certainly not in free agency. For them to have kind of overhauled what they do offensively and find stuff that works, which I think they do, they're a very multifaceted offense. They have a lot of weapons that you may not necessarily think of on a game-to-game basis as being world beaters. They get the job done in a lot of different ways, and most of it is just because I think Reich has a great handle on what they're able to do and what they'll do well, and he coaches guys up on it. it's not a team that makes a ton of mistakes. That's why they have the record that they have, and I don't think anybody expected them to be even 500 at this point in this season. He's done a great job managing their team, and this might, you know, I think it's one of the you know, certainly the better teams the Steelers have faced. They've had pretty much a top and bottom approach so far in this season. You get the Dolphins and the Bengals, then you get the Patriots and the Ravens. So it's definitely on the better side of teams that they're going to face, but they're not invincible. They're a beatable team. I think they've done the right things as well as they can do them to this point. Otherwise, I think they're probably kind of at their ceiling. I don't think it's a team that's going to win more than maybe 9 games this year. Just a huge game for the Steelers, though. They have to win this. The hole that they've already dug themselves, they're going to have to find a way to be better than a pretty good football team. I think they can do that, but you got to worry about the quarterback. I mean, it's Jacoby Brissett's in a rare, quarterback advantage game for the Colts. So he shows up, he plays well, and protects the ball. They're going to be pretty tough to beat.
I know I brought up the trade deadline. This will be the last question. The trade deadline last week, too. Even Le'Veon Bell's name's been dangled. I'm shocked. I mean, I thought he was the be-all, end-all. I'm shocked. But how much more exciting is it for a reporter to cover a trade deadline in the NFL that actually now has trades?
You know, it wasn't that long ago that I remember bragging to my NBA colleagues that I get to breathe on trade deadline days.
Right.
It's not the case anymore, and I'm still convinced, and I've got my tinfoil hat on here, I'm still convinced we're going to find out something in regards to the upcoming CBA negotiations, whether that's some type of rule implementation, a change of rookie contract scale, or flat out that nobody expects there to be a season played after 2021. There's something that's going to happen that we're going to look back and say, that's why all these trades happened, that's why so many first-round picks got dealt. For current assets, it just doesn't seem natural to me that this many teams would be trading first round picks for players, and we still got an hour and a half left. I don't think there's anybody left that's worth a first round pick. I think there are a couple guys out there that would fetch a second, and I think we'll still see a big trade here before the end. A variety of different guys could go. I don't think it's a Jet player, even though they're actively advertising that, there's an open house on one Jets Plaza right now. Kick the tires on any player.
I was just on Route 3 the other day, and they had the billboard said these guys are available. There's a list. It was very impressive.
Trade them all. Let's see what we can get. I mean, it's fun to see, and I'm sure Gary Phillips, my Jets Wire editor, is – he's got arthritis in his hands and smoke coming off his keyboard, but they're newsworthy. I mean, I think if anything that they would trade Robbie Anderson. I don't think any real notable player is going to go, but no. Everything we're hearing, Trent Williams is legitimately on the table. I think somebody's going to make a run at him.
Well, he should be
not
going to play.
Well, it's a dicey proposition, but any team that wants a left tackle now is going to need a left tackle in week one.
You got that right.
So, in my opinion, I think that's worth a second-round pick for a team that wants to build a base and needs to build a base. And I understand how much compensation the Browns have sent out already, in stark contrast to what they've done in the past. I think now they want to find a way to convince people that they're trying to win now. Either way, clear and obvious, they need a tackle. So I would say just quit screwing around. Don't worry about the optics and just make the deal. I think it's the right move for them. Washington isn't gaining anything beyond 4 p.m. today. They will have wasted the entire season if they don't deal him for something. I think that's a move they need to make, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's the one we hear about come 3:30-ish.
But you're talking about the Redskins. All right, so
either team at this point, you can't predict either one of them. I know that.
Neil, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the day.
It's going to be a long one. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Jersey Shore on Friday night in the playoffs. And Salem's Grove will be on Eagle 107 and Lewisburg will be on 100.9 The Valley. It's amazing what one injury can do. I thought Lewisburg was humming along pretty well, got the running back hurt, and now problem. Normally when one cleans house, they walk in and they look at everybody and say, look, you're all gone. Now that's cleaning house. And then there's the Pirates. You're gone. And a few weeks later, and you're gone. And a few more weeks later, and you're gone. And then you look around, there's nobody left. Okay. The winter meetings are coming up in about 5-6 weeks. I strongly recommend they have a general manager and a manager in place. That's just me. Maybe I'm being silly. We'd like to trade with you. I'm sorry, there's nobody left to trade with.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf. So you're going to walk in and you're going to clean house. I hate when that happens. And a lot of good people get lost in that shuffle. A lot of really good people with families. But in sports, owner decides we're in a clean house. So they walk in, they tell everybody, they say, look, I'm sorry for everybody, this is your last day. Not the Pirates. We'll fire the manager the day after the season. Yeah, okay. And we'll fire the team president a few weeks later. And then a few weeks after that, we fire the general manager. You have to admit, they have their own way of doing it. Nubias Wilbon joins us from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Great to have you with us.
Man, I am fantastic, man. How are you guys? And by the way, I didn't think you said college guys would be giving so much love to a guy from the University of Alabama there in Ozzie Newsome, but I appreciate it.
Absolutely. No. I've done a lot of games at Alabama. The fans down there are tremendous. They've always treated us very well. So,
nah, man, it's a great place down there in Tuscaloosa.
Yes, it is. All right, there aren't many teams, Nubias, that when they, quote, clean house, do it spread out so often, like the Pirates have. I mean, normally when you clean house the day after they're cleaning house, X, Y, and Z are gone, we're done. Eh, we'll get rid of him. And a few weeks later, we'll get rid of him. And then a little while later, we'll get rid of him. What has it been like for you to watch this play out?
Well, first of all, they have no appreciation for my vacation time or even trying to give you a little bit of time off here. So that was very much one of the issues there, Steve. But no, but seriously, I mean, I will say this. Bob Nutting, the owner, explained it as best he could. He knew he was going to let go of Clint. He started having these conversations back in August with people he trusts in baseball. I don't know who these people are, but they're people who he seems to trust and respect. He knew he was going to let Clint go. I think the decisions on Frank Cooley, the president, was harder, and definitely the decision on Neil Huntington. But ultimately, he decided that this was going to be the best route to go, hiring Travis Williams from the Penguins, who was recently with the New York Islanders as team president, and then allowing Travis Williams, who doesn't have any baseball experience, but he does have a lot of experience with winning, obviously being a member of the Penguins franchise, to then hire what he hopes to be the next great GM, and then that GM will hire the Panthers. So, in summary, they have no respect for me getting some time off from what was already a very tough season.
If they just could have just cut the ties right away, then you could have gone down south to North Carolina or the beach somewhere in the Gulf or whatever and had a good time.
Absolutely, but, you know, that's not how the Pirates work. But, I mean, one thing I will say is I do somewhat understand the rationale of Bob saying, I really wanted to take my time with this. I really wanted to make sure that this was the right decision. I think that he, when he decided, him and Frank decided that their relationship was no longer working out, he wanted to make sure that Travis Williams was in place before he made a decision on Neil Huntington as GM. I don't agree with that philosophy, but you know what? It's his money, not my money. So, you know, but you know what? They got the result that probably needed to happen as far as cutting bait and starting anew, and now they have an opportunity to hire some new blood there on the North Shore of Pittsburgh.
You did say something in the middle of that answer, and you said, quote, it's not my money. It is his money.
Yeah.
Okay? And
it
since
is his money.
It's his money so he can make his decisions. But can an argument be made that because it's his money and he's been unwilling to go beyond a budget, that he's tied the hands of the people that ended up getting fired?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a very fair argument to make. I mean, the payroll that he has issued out, particularly last season, I mean, I think they were opening day payrolls around $75 million. And that was one of the bottom payrolls in baseball. But you know who had less payroll than them? The Tampa Bay Rays.
Right, exactly.
You know, they made the playoffs. The Oakland Athletics had a payroll similar, and they made the playoffs and had a competitive team. And Oakland has been good for the last, really, 10 years with Billy Beane as GM.
And
the Twins were in that same mix. But the Twins also added Mr. Cruz. They had about 35 bombs there. So.
Yeah.
You know, again, if you're going to go that route of having a lower payroll, then you better hit when it comes to the draft. Or you better get creative like the Tampa Bay Rays with the opener and all those pitchers they have coming back up there, including local kid Brandon McKay. So, I mean, you're talking about finding ways to utilize these systems. Either you're going to spill out the Yankees or the Red Sox, or you're going to get creative like the Rays and the A's and so on and so forth. Or you're going to be with the Pirates at that. Now I think they're realizing they're going to have to get more creative if they're going to win.
Well, during the summers when I'm not doing Penn State football and basketball, I get the privilege of sitting there and broadcasting Steakhouse Spikes Baseball. I saw McKay hit one 448 feet. I mean,
nice.
Right? I mean, and we knew he was going to pitch too, because you know you talk to their organizational people when they come in, so we knew he was going to pitch. And I remember talking to his grandparents because he went to Blackhawk High School.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to his grandparents, and they were just thrilled by the whole thing. So, yeah, you're right. He's been critical of what Tampa Bay's done. But what the Pirates did, though, a year and a half, a little, right around there, is they went completely against philosophy, and they dealt Meadows and Glasnow, two top prospects, for Chris Archer. Is it important, in your opinion, Nubias, that they stick to what their plan is and not get too adventurous?
Well, I mean, see, that's the thing, and that's where it gets interesting, because one could argue that, hey, the Pirates went for it. They made a move that is going for it.
Agreed.
And that is what you want to see a team do sometimes.
Agreed.
Unfortunately, when you go for it, those are the costs.
Yeah.
And that cost, like for me, I covered the Atlanta Braves for the last 4 years before I had my first season in Pittsburgh, and one of the arguments there was, hey, we got all these prospects. Are we going to start trading some of them to get things to happen? For instance, the Braves had an opportunity to get Christian Yelich.
Yeah.
But you know who the Brewers wanted? Excuse me, you know who the Marlins wanted? They wanted Ronald Acuña and Ozzie Albies.
Oh, yeah.
Now, one can argue that Yelich is an MVP, which he is, and he's a solid player. But they wanted Ronald Acuña and Ozzie Albies. Now, one could argue that was a fair trade at the time, but if you look to see what those guys became, even if Yelich continues to do what he does, he's not going to give you what Ozzie Albies or Ronald Acuña did. You get what I'm saying?
Right. Well, and you're right about that, and I completely I go with that completely with you. Now I want to ask you about the Braves, and then I'll get back to the Pirates for a moment. You watch that organization build. mm-hmm. where they brought themselves back from the veterans that they had, and then they went to their farm system. What has impressed you about what the Braves have done that maybe the Pirates can take a page from?
Well, I mean, drafting and developing is where it started. I mean, you look at, and also, too, they won in the Dominican, and they won in Latin America. Yeah. You look at what they, okay, Ozzy Albies, Johan Camargo, and Ronald Acuna. You want to know what their signing bonus was combined?
Well, it wasn't that much.
No, it's about $500,000 combined for all three of them. And you're talking about three starter caliber players. You're talking about two guys who are all-stars and a guy who Acuna, who could be a Hall of Famer in 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, who has that level of ability. So you signed Acuna out of Venezuela for about $300,000, which is pennies. Now, if Acuna were an American kid coming out of the draft, how much do you think his overslot bonus would be?
Whew.
Right.
Yeah.
How much do you think Ozzy Albies' overslot bonus would be? So, again, you got to win in those areas. But also, too, you got to pick up kids like D'Ansby Swanson and make them better. You have to develop through the minors as well as through the big league staff. One of the things the Braves have is a guy named Ron Washington, who was great at developing infielders.
Yeah.
You got development has to continue. That's where the Pirates, going back to them, where they struggle. They struggle with drafting and they struggle with developing. They have to get better there, just like the Houston Astros did when they broke it down.
Well, Houston, the Yankees, and the Red Sox have all outdrafted the Pirates.
Right.
That's a big problem. That's a huge problem.
And then also, too, Houston will still go and sign a Verlander. They'll still go and sign a Garrett Cole.
Sure. Right.
The Yankees, remember when the Cubs went for it, they got Aroldis Chapman, right? Who was in that trade? A man named Gleyber Torres.
Right, exactly.
See, but again, now the Cubs, you could argue, they won that trade at the time because Chapman, they don't win the World Series without that.
Right.
But now, when the Cubs are kind of struggling trying to find their way, they sure can use Gleyber Torres right now.
One final question. Usually when a managerial change is made, Philadelphia's a good example. They go from Gabe Kapler to the experienced hand in Joe Girardi. If a team is a loose clubhouse, they then want to go to a stricter manager. What direction do the Pirates need to go in with their manager?
Well, it's going to be interesting because I don't see the Pirates going out and getting a Girardi who they're going to pay $3 million to after they're still on the hook for $3 million plus the clear hurdle. What I see them doing is going to find a guy like Darren Shelton with the Twins, a guy like Espada with the Astros, maybe a Mark Hatze type of first-year guy who's a player who people respect but also knows the analytics and works with Jerez. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, these guys aren't filling out their own lineup cards early anymore. So very few organizations are letting that happen. You want a GM and a manager to be in sync. That's why the GM hire is going to be so important.
Right.
But you also want a manager who knows how to get along with people.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a combination of factors.
Tobias, it was great talking with you. This was a lot of fun. Really appreciate the time you gave us today.
Man, no problem. Have me in on any time.
Okay, so you're going to see that the NCAA has approved the Board of Governors' image and likeness. Okay. All right, that's fine. But that's not, okay, but there's a long, long way to go. And as I said, they have time. Let's take the California law. The California law that was signed in by Governor Gavin Newsom a few weeks ago does not go into effect until January 1st, 2023. Okay. So in that context, you're still looking at a little bit more than 38 months. So I would say the key would be the next 26 months or so. You can put something together in the next 2 years plus. When you have a little more time to think things out as opposed to the pressure of the last 12 months of trying to get something done. All right. So this is what they put out today. Now, the first part of this is just restating their values. But here's the framework they say they want to craft the new rules around image and likeness. Number one, assure student-athletes are treated similarly to non-athlete students unless a compelling reason exists to differentiate. That's always been the deal. Maintain the priorities of education and the collegiate experience to provide opportunities for student-athlete success. Again, same story. That's just reiterating what they've always said. Ensure rules are transparent. Oh, boy. Okay, that part. Ensure that rules are transparent, focused, and enforceable, and facilitate fair and balanced competition. I don't think we're going to go into that one. Make clear the distinction between collegiate and professional opportunities. Now, here, after the first three reestablished, again, what they're about, now they get into the meat of this. Make clear the distinction between collegiate and professional opportunities. That's one. So that's going to be one they have to figure out and null out. Make clear that compensation for athletics performance or participation is impermissible. So they don't want them getting paid by the university. Outside entity, under the rules, yes. But not being paid, which then goes into the next one. Reaffirm that student-athletes are students first and not employees of the university. Believe it or not, this is actually important in the world of Title IX. Because if student-athletes were to be employees of the university, Title IX would not come into play in terms of equaling out scholarships. But by making this statement that they are students first and not employees of the universities, well, number one, it puts out that line that they're students. Number two, it also keeps Title IX in place. Enhance principles of diversity, inclusion, and gender equity. That again goes back to Title IX. Protect the recruiting environment and prohibit inducements to select, remain at, or transfer to a specific institution. Okay. The market will be important here. What also is going to be important is you might be surprised who would end up benefiting from this. You know, obviously football, men's basketball players. But you know what? A soccer player here could do it. A volleyball player could do it. Absolutely, wrestlers could benefit from their name, image, and likeness. So, here's the deal that you have to be concerned about. There'll be a couple of items here. Number one, if said student, let's take Sean Carey's star quarterback. He is now in the decision-making process as to which one of five schools he wants to go to. School A happens to have somebody who owns a business, and they're going to pay him, they'd like to, him to be a part of their advertising campaign at $10,000. Oh, wait, but school B has the same deal, except we're going to go with 15. And team C, 20. And back to team A, 10. No, we can get to 25. See, and there's where you start. There's the rub. Right? Now you're in school. Sean Carey's star quarterback is in school. Sean Carey is considering the transfer portal. But you know what? It turns out there's an entity, business, that says, you know, Sean, you stay at school here, and we'll do the same thing. We'll use smaller numbers. We'll make it worth your while, $5,000 to be part of our advertising campaign. Right? Or Sean puts his name into the portal. That $5,000 is still there as a possibility. But, hey, you know what? Over here, hey, you transfer here. We got a business here that's going to, you know, get you $10,000. See, this is where they're trying to, what is it? Now, here's something else you're going to have to deal with. And every student athlete needs to understand the words I'm about to say. Get used to something called Form 1099. Form 1099 will be very important to you, and you better fill it out. What everybody's going to quickly learn that for bigger money, I don't mean for smaller amounts, hey, come on over, sign at our store, we'll give you $200 each. That's going to happen to a lot of teams. You know, the players will get $200 each. The EA Sports. You know, something like that. But what you're also going to find out is what is the key to any advertising deal? Sean, you know that. What's the key to any advertising deal? The key to any advertising deal is, what's your return? I think you're going to find out that it's not going to be as much of a return as some people think. 18-year-olds usually, unfortunately, I'm not trying to say this to, but 18-year-olds usually are not the greatest investment vehicle in terms of reliability. So what you'll have initially, some people will go too far. Then everything will settle in. So that's where, I think initially, once they pass this, there's going to be this rush. I predict in 5 years it's going to settle down dramatically. Because people will look around and go, you know what, I need a return on my investment here. We didn't see sales go up. Or maybe you do see sales go up, but usually that's not the vehicle for doing it. Usually. All right. Donnie Collins tomorrow on Penn State Football on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.